Welcome to the Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett McGarry. This week, for the first time ever, a movie trailer has debuted in space. Plus,
I'm Jeff Braun. I watched a fun new HBO show co-starring Robert Downey Jr. and revisited a classic movie trilogy. Plus,
I revisited one of my favorite movies of all time, and that would be Judgment Night. So, as mentioned, the first trailer has debuted in space for Transformers 1. And we'll talk about the space stuff in a minute. First, it's a cartoon, and I'm going to play you a clip from the beginning of the trailer.
So, how long do you think we'll be here? I'm not talking to you.
You know what? We are so screwed!
Thought you weren't talking to me.
Okay, first of all, Braun, have you seen this trailer yet?
I have not.
Okay, so you want to guess on who those characters were?
One of them's Optimus Prime and the other one is Ratchet.
Okay. So you figure, I never would have guessed that it was Optimus Prime and Megatron.
That's what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it, yeah. This is what I'm used to them sounding like.
One shall stand, one shall fall. Why throw away your life so recklessly? That's a question you should ask yourself, Megatron.
No! I'll crush you with my bare hands!
So that's from the 1986 movie.
Why would a robot use the phrase bare hands? But that's beside the point.
Yeah, so here's the deal. Technically, they are not yet Optimus Prime and Megatron, because this is an origin story. And in this story, they are Orion Pax and D-16. And this movie will tell the story of how they go from brothers in arms to sworn enemies.
I know we're just lowly worker bots who can't even transform. Don't you want to see what's out there?
There's a reason no one goes to the surface. It's dangerous.
Why'd you bring jetpacks?
If we survive this, I'm gonna kill you!
I accept those terms.
Impressive voice cast in this. Chris Hemsworth is Prime. Brian Tyree Henry is Megatron. Keegan-Michael Key is Bumblebee.
Hi there, I'm B-127. I'm actually working on some nicknames. The one I'm floating right now is Badassatron, which is actually pronounced
Badassatron.
We're gonna call you B.
Lawrence Fishburne plays some sort of powerful being that gives them something to help them transform.
You have proven yourself worthy. Take these and access your full potential.
And of course, they managed to work in this line.
It's time to show them we are more than meets the eye.
And in this clip, you'll hear Scarlett Johansson as RC and Hemsworth doing a pretty good job at sounding more like Optimus Prime.
We've got these powers for a reason. Let's use them.
We stand here together as one.
That's not bad. Not bad, Hemsworth. Peter Cullen will forever be the immortal voice of Optimus Prime, but that's pretty good. And also in the voice cast are Steve Buscemi and John Hamm, and the movie is coming out in September. It looks like on September 13th. I've seen mixed results on that. Some say September 13th, others are saying the 20th. Whatever. Comes out in September. So, as mentioned, it debuted in space. On Tuesday, Hemsworth and Henry appeared in a video explaining that it's debuting in space, and I had no idea what that meant. But it turned out to be kind of cool. They sent up this little craft to 125,000 feet, and you can actually watch the video from the vantage point of that craft, like as it leaves the ground and takes an hour just to reach its goal, and from the ground into space. And they show on this screen that's attached to the bottom of the craft, that's just kind of hanging from the bottom of the craft, the trailer. So the first time it aired was live on this thing in space. So interesting gimmick, neat little stunt to bring it some attention. Didn't really help to get me excited about the movie, though.
Like, I guarantee you somewhere in Hollywood right now, Vin Diesel is upset that he didn't think of that first for Fast and the Furious. Why didn't we do that? We even went to space.
Well, now Vin Diesel will probably send one to the moon.
Yes, that's true. Or the core of the Earth or something. One or the other.
Yeah, but I don't... I don't really know what to think of this. Because, and not, this doesn't look like it has anything to do with the various Transformers movies that we've seen from Michael Bay and whatnot. The Bumblebee movie, I still maintain, is really good. And the last one, Rise of the Beasts, wasn't too bad. But this cartoon, I don't know, like the voices are weird. And the idea that they were pals, young pals. I mean, I guess that was the case. I can't remember Transformers canon. I just don't know that I need an origin story for this.
I mean, Transformers canon is Hasbro or Mattel or whatever came up with these toys and just invented the cartoon to sell toys. So I don't think there is a canon. So I like that they're taking a swing with it. And it's just not just an animated movie, but it's not like there's hundreds of millions of dollars riding on this for that reason alone. So I like that they're trying something, and who knows, maybe by the end of the movie, the voices will be back to where you'd like them to be. And then they'll be like, you know, set themselves up for a nice little run of a big series of animated movies or something.
And it makes sense that they wouldn't bring in a guy like Peter Cullen to do the voice of Optimus Prime, because this is when they're young robots and they haven't even become Transformers yet. So it takes them a while to embody that.
Yeah.
Heroic voice. My name is Optimus Prime. That was my best shot. So that's Transformers. And Jeff, you watched The Sympathizer.
Yeah, a new HBO show co-starring Robert Downey Jr. called The Sympathizer.
Biracial. Bilingual. That was a synthesis of incompatibilities. So what did I do?
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Get down!
Saigon, 1975. I was a man of two faces.
You are the only one I can trust.
The Sympathizer debuted last Sunday on HBO and Crave. It's produced by A24, which is mostly known for its kind of arty films, although it has a big hit on its hands now with Civil War. But in the past, they're mostly known for movies like Moonlight or Everything Everywhere All at Once, and lately for The Zone of Interest and The Iron Claw. And now this TV series, which is based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, which was based on the true story of a young Vietnamese man who is a North Vietnamese communist spy working as a South Vietnamese army officer and CIA liaison during the Vietnam War. In the 70s. His character is only referred to as the captain. He's played by Ho Wan Day, who has not been in much before this, and I've never seen him in anything. And this guy should be a movie star because he's very charismatic and he holds the screen and holds his own with Robert Downey Jr., who is a movie star and has a little charisma himself. The show begins just before the fall of Saigon, and after the initial episode, we'll relocate to America, where the captain and a bunch of other South Vietnamese have escaped at the end of the war, where he will continue to spy for the North. RDJ plays a CIA guy named Claude in the first episode. I've only seen the first episode, by the way. There are new ones each Sunday, and apparently Robert Downey Jr. is going to play several characters throughout the series, so that'll be interesting. He plays sort of like a different character in each episode, what I've been led to believe. And he hams it up the way that he can, but it fits very well with the vibe of this show, because that vibe is just electric. Usually with war stuff, and especially with Vietnam War stuff, the tone out of Hollywood is pretty somber. Vietnam material carries the extra baggage, of course, of being a war America lost, and most people were against, so it can get very existential, very heavy. And while The Sympathizer does not shy away from the heavy stuff, it is mostly a pitch black comedy with some drama. I really couldn't pin it down, and that's a good thing, because whenever you get a piece of a movie or a show in front of you that you don't really know what to make of it, that's kind of fun and exciting, because a lot of stuff is so trite and boring and you've seen it 1,000 times before. The show is also very stylish. The creator and director of several episodes is a guy by the name of Park Chan-wook, who's a famous Korean filmmaker. He made the movie Old Boy, and there's a vibrancy to everything that was very welcome. There's also a lot of color and funky camera moves and rewinding and fast-forwarding through time. It's a lot of fun to watch, and the characters are interesting. The captain has a couple of friends, one of whom is also a spy, another who's a soldier. There's the general who's his boss, who is loud and demanding and very funny. And it's all very unexpected, and I found it to be delightful, although again, there is some heavy subject matter, of course, because it's war and people die. And there's a terrific action sequence at the end of the first episode. Like I said, that first episode is all I've seen, and the show is about to move from Vietnam to the U.S., so it's hard to know exactly what to expect going forward, but I'm dying to find out. It's very well made. It's an interesting spy story. It's a lot of fun. Not sure what else you could ask for. I highly recommend The Sympathizer on HBO and Crave. New episodes Sundays until the end of May.
And up next, we'll tell you what's new at the movies this weekend. Guy Ritchie needs some help with his titles. We'll explain that Next, you are listening to The Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff, he's Brett, and Conan O'Brien has a new show on Max and Crave here in Canada. It's called Conan O'Brien Must Go.
Earth, to truly appreciate the astounding grandeur, sometimes you must defile it. Behold the defiler.
I'm Conan, the Red.
Are my pants falling? I think my pants are falling down.
Conan O'Brien Must Go is a travel show that finds the former late-night talk show host visiting other countries to meet fans, and hilarity ensues.
This is a travel show I'm doing.
Oh, my.
Where I visit my fans.
Holy s***.
From around the world.
We must embrace the way people do in this country, which is I'm supposed to kiss you, right?
You're making it so weird.
That's what I do.
That's what
that is my gift.
He did a bunch of travel specials for his old talk show that was basically the same idea, just going to a foreign land and mixing with the locals and being all Conan about it. Pretty sure if you like Conan, this will be right up your alley. It's been a while since we've actually seen Conan. His late night show wrapped up in 2021. And he did 28 years hosting late night shows, including his infamously short Tonight Show run in the late 2000s. We have, however, been able to listen to Conan since 2018 on his popular Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend podcast, which is in my regular rotation. If you like Conan, it's good stuff. And I'm sure this new show will be good stuff, too. It's 4 episodes to start and sees him traveling to Norway, Thailand, Ireland, and Argentina. They've all been released all at once, and they are available on Crave right now.
Tango flows through the blood of the Argentine people. Tango. It's pronounced Tango.
Last tango in Paris.
Last tango in Paris. Or more accurately, last tango in Paris.
You say tango or tongo?
Tango.
Tango, right?
It's tango.
It's not tongo. These people live here.
Oh, that's great that he got into a squabble about that.
That's funny.
So new at the movies. Oh, and by the way, he was on Fallon earlier in the week, or late last week, teeing up the show, and it was really cool.
Oh, really?
To see him back.
Yeah, you don't
studio.
See a lot of talk show hosts guesting on other talk shows. After
yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, and the dynamic between the two of them was really cool. And when they appear as guests, they you can tell they feel uncomfortable. And half the time they try to turn it into they're doing the interview.
Yeah. They don't want to talk about themselves. They just want to ask the questions and crack the jokes.
Okay, so a couple of new movies this weekend we want to tell you about. The first one is Abigail.
You all know the rules. No real names. No cell phones.
Whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
$7 million per person. Something doesn't add up. This whole thing is a trap.
I'm sorry about what's gonna happen to you.
We couldn't have a vampire.
I like playing with my phone.
Abigail, only in theaters April 19th. Rated R.
After a group of would-be criminals kidnap the 12-year-old ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, all they have to do to collect a $50 million ransom is watch the girl overnight. In an isolated mansion, the captors start to dwindle one by one, and they discover, to their mounting horror, that they are locked inside with no normal little girl. It's actually based on and is a reimagining of the 1936 Universal classic monsters film, Dracula's Daughter. And it's actually getting quite good reviews. I'm just looking at the Rotten Tomatoes right now, and it is at 85%, 86%. Now, so yeah, I think this looks like an interesting one. Could be a lot of fun. And also this weekend, new from Guy Ritchie, it's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
I have a mission I want you to lead.
I'll lead my own team. You won't like them. They're all bad.
They'll need to be.
What's the target?
Hitler's Atlantic Fleet.
Marvelous.
Hitler is not playing by the rules, and neither are we.
Abort this mission now.
Sorry, can't hear you.
Please do.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, in theaters April 19th.
Okay, so first of all, we mentioned the titles thing.
Yikes.
They actually even, it was the first line, they did a, the Screen Junkies YouTube channel. They did an honest trailer this week for Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes movies.
Okay.
Which is fun. And this is the first line in that video.
From a guy with a thing for gentlemen.
But now we should very clarify immediately where we're talking about the titles. The word gentleman that is appearing in, because he did the movie The Gentleman. He did the television show this year, The Gentleman. That's on Netflix and it's pretty good. And now we've got the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. So
he's going to change the name of Wrath of Man to Wrath of Gentlemen.
He should. So this is based upon recently declassified files of the British War Department and is inspired by true events. It's an action comedy that tells the story of the first ever Special Forces organization. It was formed during World War II by UK Prime Minister Winston Churchill and a small group of military officials, including author Ian Fleming. The top secret combat unit, composed of a motley crew of rogues and mavericks, goes on a daring mission against the Nazis using entirely unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly fighting techniques. Ultimately, their audacious approach changed the course of the war and laid the foundation for the British SAS and modern black ops warfare. So I think this looks like a lot of fun. It, too, is getting decent reviews, 72%. The main star is Henry Cavill. You also heard the voices of Cary Elwes in there. And Alan Ritchson is in it. What I've seen of his accent is a little spotty, but I mean, Alan Ritchson is big and bad and beats people up.
Yeah, guy's everywhere. I saw him in that movie Ordinary Angels last month, and Reacher, of course, came. This is all in 2024. He's got like one new thing each month so far this year.
Yeah, he's having a good year. The talk of him playing Batman keeps popping up.
Oh, he'd be a pretty good Batman, I think.
Do you like that?
Yeah, why not? Because we've seen so many other Batmans. No disrespect to Robert Pattinson, but he's kind of the scrawnier of all the Batmans we've ever had or whatever. So to have like a big hulking guy would be cool. I'd say more likely he gets cast as Bane at some point. But
yeah. And regarding Robert Pattinson, he did that on purpose, I think. He refused. They wanted him to work out more and bulk up, and he refused because he thought, well, no, this is early in Batman's time, so why don't we make it more realistic? He was probably just too lazy.
Yeah. And also, we just had a bunch of movies with Ben Affleck where he got all bulk. He was like a bulkiest Batman we've had yet.
So. Yeah. So this, that would be cool, and it would be certainly comic correct. I mean, I haven't read a Batman comic in a while, but if you've ever read any comic book, the guys are often portrayed as like gigantic hulking men with muscles upon their muscles. Yep. Even Spider-Man, who's a high school kid, and they're just completely unrealistic. So you know what? That honest trailer made me want to go back and rewatch those Sherlock Holmes movies. I liked them.
I've never seen them.
Never?
Nope.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I haven't. I like him, and I like Robert Downey Jr.
And Jude Law.
And Jude Law. He's Watson.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe I'll check those out someday, too.
And, the guy's name is escaping me, but the guy who plays Moriarty, he was in Mad Men. He's one of those, he's in everything, guys. He was in Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jared. I got one name.
Is it Harris?
Yes.
Okay.
Jared Harris, that's right.
Yeah.
And because he's the son of the old man Harris, who's in, like, Unforgiven and 1,000 other British movies from decades past.
Okay. I wanted to watch those movies, and the honest trailer, I think, also featured a couple of clips from movies like Snatch and even Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So now I've, after
great
watching
titles, by the way.
Yeah.
Early movies.
For sure. So having watched The Gentleman on Netflix, and with this coming out, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's time to revisit some Guy Ritchie movies. Even Rock and Rolla. I've only seen that once. I saw it once on the big screen. I'd like to revisit that. That's a Butler movie, I think. That could be a Butler verse.
We've done it. I've done it.
Oh, did you do it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Damn it. Up next, I want to tell you about one of my favorite movies of all time, even if the critics thought it was dumb. You are listening to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett. He's Jeff. We are The Couch Potatoes. In a couple of minutes' time, I want to tell you about how I decided to revisit one of my favorite films of all time. But before that, I want to tell you about a show that started in recent weeks. It was just back on April 10th that it started on Prime. And it's a show that I kind of was curious about it. I saw the trailer and I thought, I don't really understand what's happening here. And I'm not familiar with the world it's based on or adapted from. It's actually adapted from a video game. It's called Fallout.
You You come from a world of rules, of laws. This place is indifferent to all of that.
You need to go home.
That's what people keep telling me.
What happened up here?
It's the same thing that always happens. Everyone wants to save the world. They just disagree on how.
All right, so Fallout, from what I understand, it is not a direct adaptation of the game. Like, it's not trying to tell the story that is told in the game, but it is in this world. And I'm scared to look too closely because I don't want to spoil anything for myself. So I don't want to really educate myself on the video game series, and I don't want to educate myself or potentially spoil the television show because they dropped all 8 episodes at once, which Prime doesn't often do. So that's kind of weird that they did that for this one. But it's a neat, it's a really cool premise. I guess it's somewhat similar to that show that I really loved last year on Apple TV Plus, Silo, which sees the remaining people on the planet living in this giant underground silo because of the devastation above. And this is somewhat similar, but we get a peek at how it happened. So it takes us into the 60s, and in this world, in this imagined world, the world is just devastated by nuclear war in the 1960s. And now we are 200 years into the future, and those who are left, it's a story of haves and have-nots in a world in which there's nothing, basically almost nothing left to have. So the gentle denizens of luxury fallout shelters are forced to return to the irradiated hellscape their ancestors left behind and are shocked to discover an incredibly complex, gleefully weird, and highly violent universe waiting for them. So I watched the first episode, thought it was pretty cool, and one of your favorites, you like Walton Goggins, right?
Oh yeah, he's really good. Justified.
Okay, so he is in this. Whether he's a villain or not, I'm not entirely sure. In appearance, you would think he's a villain because he is a victim of the fallout, and mm-hmm. He's kind of like, looks like the Red Skull.
Oh, okay.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the Marvel Comics.
Oh, that's Walton Goggins. I've seen the picture of that noseless guy in the promotion for this or whatever. I didn't put that together.
Yeah, that's him. And in his story is actually quite remarkable in this so far. So I've only watched the first episode. But yeah, it was gleefully weird. And it had, even though it's a show about a post-apocalyptic world, and bad things are happening throughout the episode, it has a slightly lighter tone and a more playful tone. So I really enjoyed that first episode. So I'm going to check out more of Fallout on Prime. In the meantime, I just want to play a song for you here to tee up. I'm curious to know first if Jeff knows this or if Jeff's even seen this movie.
I know the soundtrack very well.
Yeah?
It was played in our high school grade 12 lounge, like, on repeat that year that it came out because somebody had it and it was really good, and rap, metal, crossover stuff was huge, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know the soundtrack. I've never seen the movie.
Okay. So the movie came out in October of 1993. Let me play you this fantastic promo that somebody probably pulled off of a VHS tape.
Judgment Night is a hair-raising, heart-stopping, navel-biting film.
Come to the neighborhood, boys.
An absolute must-see.
We saw a boy get murdered tonight, and if they catch us, they're gonna kill us too.
A non-stop trip that leaves you breathless.
I got a wife and a little girl, and I will get back to them tonight.
Action-packed. Edge of your seat. Excitement.
You better believe it.
Judgment Night. Rated R. Starts Friday at theaters everywhere.
Okay, so, and we can talk more about the soundtrack in a moment, but the first thing I should probably say is I have a really difficult time being objective about this film because I loved it so much when I was a teenager. It is at 38% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it came out when I was 16. I just turned 16 a month before. I can't remember if we saw this in the theaters, probably not, but once we got our hands on it at home, We watched it over and over and over again, me and my buddies. So it focuses on Emilio Estevez as the main star. He's a new dad. wants a night out with the boys. So he goes out with his friend Mike, played by Cuba Gooding Jr., and Ray, who's played by Jeremy Piven, and their younger brother, or his younger brother, John, who's played by Stephen Dorff. And they are going to a boxing match in this giant RV that Ray has gotten his hands on, this big luxury RV. They decide they're going to go ride this thing and go to this boxing match. And they're stuck in gridlock traffic. It's in Chicago. And they decide to take a shortcut, and they end up in the wrong neighborhood. They end up in a bad neighborhood, and they see some bad things. And Dennis Leary plays the lead bad guy, which is an interesting choice, but yeah. He's really good. I was shocked at how scary he could be, because he's basically doing his act. He's just screaming and yelling and swearing a lot, but and because he always looks so angry, right? Yeah,
that's true. His act is just him all riled up all the time. So
yeah, so it was actually really perfect, and he was chilling. So these normal guys just trying to get to a boxing match, just out for a night with the boys, witness something horrible, and now they're witnesses, and they have to escape, and just from there, it's problems. And carnage ensues in the wrong neighborhood. So it's just about four. Like, I love the what if premise. What if you found yourself in a position where you had to run for your life to survive a night, like being chased by hardened criminals? Would you be able to rise up and find the courage to fight should you have to take a stand? Or would you just lay down and die?
Lay down and die.
Yeah, and it takes them through like rail yards and some buildings that are kind of dilapidated and just like some really grungy stuff. And yeah, we get to see how these guys react, and it's pretty cool. And it's pretty cool to see also the criminals, how they start to turn on each other a little bit, because they can't catch them. And at some point they're like, can we just like, really? Do we really need to find these guys? Told you the rules. No witnesses. But I love this movie. You know, Rotten Tomatoes says it's preposterous. At least the negative reviews there. Like I said, 38%. And so they say that some of the reviews are preposterous. And of course, aimed at teenage boys, points out one. So I guess that's why I loved it.
Yeah.
Because it was made for teenagers.
And demo.
And I loved it. Although it was rated R. So I always never understood that. Like, if you're going to make a movie for teens, but it's...
Yeah, yeah. But they know teens are getting in, especially back in the day. No one cares.
But the soundtrack, so the movie kind of came and went. I think it was a modest hit for its time, but it is by no means, it is a classic to me.
Yeah.
But it is not classic. One of Hollywood's all-time great films. But that soundtrack was legendary, as you mentioned, Jeff mentioned, the rap rock. And I'm pretty sure this album, I know I'm not saying it was the first, but this album, I think, is what really sort of helped rap rock and rock metal specifically. Because
yeah,
we'd
sure.
already had rap rock. I mean, we had the legendary Aerosmith and Run DMC.
Yep.
That paved the way. I can't remember when Bring the Noise by Anthrax and Public Enemy came out, but I think probably
1990,
before.
Just a little bit before this, yeah.
Okay. But this one had all kinds of wacky crossover productions, like the song that I was playing, Judgment Night. That's from a band called Biohazard and the rap group Onyx. There's also Run DMC paired up with Living Color, De La Soul with Teenage Fan Club, House of Pain and Helmet. And by the way, Everlast from House of Pain is one of the bad guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's got a shaved head. Looks like a bad guy, right? Why not?
Yeah. Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill did one. Mudhoney and Sir Mix-a-Lot. Sonic Youth and Cypress Hill. So yeah, that soundtrack, I'm the same. Like that
Hanson
soundtrack was on...
Ice.
Just kidding. Who would be doing the metal? Yeah, Vanilla Ice does the metal stuff now. But yeah, I had that soundtrack on all the time too. Yeah. If you want to watch Judgment Night, it's available for free on Tubi. I recommend it. And Bron, just for the nostalgic value of being able to see the listen to the songs again.
Yeah, that it's you make a case for it. If I'm thinking of checking it out.
Yeah, you can find it again. I said, Tubi. Did I say it's on Tubi?
Tubi, yeah.
It's on Tubi. T-U-B-I, Tubi,
love
Judgment
Tubi.
Night. Up next, JB has to tell you about a revisit of the Frozen Empire. You are listening to The Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to the Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff, he's Brett, and I saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire again this week.
The city is under siege by an army of ghosts. We're gonna need more firepower.
Can I be of any help?
Aren't you retired?
Grab your juice boxes.
New York is only the beginning!
What would you have done back in the day?
I'd have showered and shaved and hit the clubs.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
Ghostbusters, March 22nd.
I don't see a lot of movies twice in theaters anymore, but I did go back to this Ghostbusters movie with the family this time, and everyone enjoyed it. Not a lot of movies that everyone will get into, so it is nice when stuff like this pops up. And at this point, you know, the kids have seen all the other Ghostbusters movies, so they were excited, and they enjoyed this one as well. In my initial review a few weeks back, I said it was fine, but I think I actually enjoyed it more the second time around, and I suppose knowing exactly what to expect helps with that. Although I found I had actually forgotten a lot of the plot, which is either a memory problem on my end, which is a likely answer, because we watch a lot of stuff, you just can't retain it all, or the movie is just, you know, unremarkable enough that there's nothing worth really remembering, which is also a possibility, but that sounds harsher than I mean. It's not that what's there is bad, it just isn't particularly memorable is all, and that's fine too. We'd like every movie to blow our minds, of course, but that simply is not how it works, and most movies do not warrant much space in the memory banks after you've seen them. The one part I criticized earlier, which was the emo ghost teenager that's in it, didn't bother me as much this time around as well, so that was a good thing. This time I did notice that Finn Wolfhard barely has anything to do with his movie. You could take him out of it altogether and nothing changes. On the flip side, Dan Aykroyd really gets a lot to do, and you can't help but feel good for him. He's pretty close to his character. Aykroyd in real life is into all this ghost business and have been trying to get everyone together for a sequel for decades, and it's a bit of a shame that it took so long, but he did finally get his sequel. I know he was in Afterlife for a minute a couple years ago, but here he's got a proper part and he's in the whole thing, and so good for Dan Aykroyd. He's been really hit or miss throughout his career, so it's nice to see him not something big in the win column again, and I gave it 3 couch cushions out of 5 the first time around, and I think I'll stick with that for round 2, but a better 3 out of 5 than before. I did like it quite a bit more.
In the fact that you mentioned, I think you said I actually enjoyed it more the second time around. I suppose knowing exactly what to expect helps.
Yeah.
So that got me thinking. I think there might be I was trying to Google it. I think there might actually be a thing for, because there are some people who like genuinely need to know.
Oh, really?
Like they need to be spoiled. Otherwise, they can't enjoy a show because the anxiety of what's coming, of the unexpected, is too much for them to bear. But whereas some people just prefer to be spoiled. Like my mom always, she used to drive me crazy because we'd be watching something and she'd say, "How does this end?" I'm like, "I'm not telling you that." But she genuinely wanted to know.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was the anxiety. And so much, I even found a... I found an essay, like an actual PDF essay, which I want to read, that was written back in 2018 in the University of South Florida. Do spoilers change a person's enjoyment of a television show? This is like an actual thesis from somebody named Olivia M. Leal.
That's pretty interesting.
It looks like it's only 100 pages or 46 pages.
Well, that was my concern with the TV show Ripley, because I've seen the movie so many times. I was like, well, I sort of know where this show is going to go. And it's like, I wonder if I would enjoy the show more if I had no idea where it was going. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But there's no way to actually do that to oneself unless you get the little Men in Black memory eraser thing or whatever.
Fair. I don't
know. Oh, yeah. So that was Ghostbusters. You still haven't seen it, eh?
No.
Okay. Well, check it out when you can. If you can't catch it in theaters, it's not really that big a deal. I did watch some other movies at home this week, and with a fourth installment just a couple of months away, I wanted to revisit a trilogy we don't talk about much in terms of great trilogies, even though 2 of the 3 are really terrific. And I'm talking about Eddie Murphy's Beverly Hills Cop.
Eddie Murphy is a Detroit cop on vacation in Beverly Hills.
How you doing?
We have 6 witnesses that say you broke in and started tearing up the place, then jumped out the window.
I'm on vacation.
Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop, rated R. starts Wednesday, December 5th at a theater near you.
There were three Beverly Hills Cop movies over the decade from 1984 to 94, and now, 30 years later, a fourth is in the offing. It's coming to Netflix this summer. The first in 84 made $234 million, which is huge. The second highest movie that year, behind only Ghostbusters, which made $5 million more. Beverly Hills Cop 2 followed in 87, made $300 million, finishing third behind Three Men and a Baby and Fatal Attraction. And that's a weird top three for a movie year, if ever there was one. And then Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out in 1994, one of the best years for movies in the history of movies, but not because of Beverly Hills Cop. It made $119 million and came nowhere near the top 10 that year. The Lion King, Forrest Gump, and True Lies were the top three. I noticed on the list today, Four Weddings and a Funeral came in eighth and made about $250 million, if you can believe that or not. I love that movie. Would never have guessed it made that much money. The Rotten Tomatoes scores are interesting. The first movie, 82%. The second, 46%. And the third, 11%. Precipitous drop-offs each time out. After rewatching all three in the past week, yes, the first one is the best one. It is a stone-cold classic, and even if there are plot holes or weaknesses or whatever, it's kind of bulletproof to me because I've loved that movie for so long. I hadn't seen it in over a decade, I'm sure, but rewatching it made me realize I still know it like the back of my hand. The second one I had not seen nearly as much as the first one, but I think it's almost as good. It's not as funny, but it is still funny, and it's a Tony Scott movie, so the action is amped up, and the look of the movie is the best in the series, and that's all thanks to Tony Scott. But I should also mention, those first two are produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, and those guys know what they're doing when it comes to action comedy movies like those, especially in the 80s. They did not return for Beverly Hills Cop 3, and that's too bad, because that movie still stinks. I remember when I saw it in 94, I just turned 18. Yay, I can go see it in a theater. And I honestly believe that I've never been as disappointed in a movie as that one. And the winter before, our family had been vacationing in California, and we went on the Universal Studios tour, and the tour stopped at a hot set for Beverly Hills Cop 3, and I almost lost my mind. Eddie wasn't there, but we got to see where they were making part of the movie on a real Hollywood set, and it was very exciting to then 17-year-old me. And then the movie just, you know, had the nerve to just suck the way it sucked. So I was like, come on. Can't I get one nice thing in my life? Come on. So for 30 years, it's been on my short list of the worst movies ever. And when I rewatched it last night, it wasn't quite as bad as I remembered, but it was also still pretty bad. It has a few moments, but not enough to make it worthwhile. It's directed by John Landis, who made other Eddie Murphy hits like Trading Places and Coming to America, so he should know what he's doing, certainly with the comedy. But apparently, though, Murphy didn't want it to be funny, which is kind of crazy, as that was, you know, why the other movies were popular. If we want just action, there are plenty of places to get just action in the 80s and 90s with Stallone and Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Steven Seagal, etc., etc. So it doesn't work as a serious movie. Everyone admits the screenplay was kind of terrible. And then with Eddie not wanting to do his shtick, it kind of felt like, well, what is the point of this? There are numerous places where, you know, you're waiting for a punchline and it just never comes. It's like the actors either forgot their dialogue or nothing had been written there to begin with. They also try to jazz up that Axel F theme song a bit, which is just a bad idea because, again, you got a perfect song. Why are you messing with it? So a swing and a miss with part three, which brings us to Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Watch your ass out there, okay?
I'm going to be fine. They love me in Beverly Hills.
Detective Foley, you ever read your own file? Shootouts, storm the peace, a lot.
Please tell me you didn't get arrested again.
Twice, but I broke out.
Technically, its title is Beverly Hills Cop Axel F, which is not good, but whatever. And Murphy's in the middle of a career resurgence of sorts, so this isn't totally unexpected. He took a break after a long string of truly terrible movies in the 2000s. I know I used to rag on him a lot, but that's because we know he's got the chops to be great. And he's already done a sequel from an 80s hit with Coming to the Number 2 America. That's pretty good. He did Candy Cane Lane last year, which was kind of not good, but honestly not as bad as I had feared. So not really sure what to expect with Beverly Hills Cop 4. There's no way it'll top the first two for me, I know that, but I really do hope it's better than number three, which again is not a very high bar to clear. Trying to manage my expectations, we'll find out on Netflix on July 3rd.
Axel.
So how many people have you pissed off so far?
I haven't pissed off anybody.
Yeah,
50-50.
Is it that high?
So far.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm telling you.
What was the movie that he was nominated for an Oscar for? Was it Dreamgirls?
Dreamgirls, yeah.
And he was essentially the front runner for actor in a supporting role, but then he didn't end up winning because what? Because he released Norbit.
Norbit, yeah. Norbit came out after the nominations, but before the voting ended or something weird like that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, that's a rough movie. I hated that movie like fire.
Everyone hated that movie. It was so badly reviewed. That's all the time we've got. I'm Brett. He's Jeff. We are the Couch Potatoes. Remember, if it requires getting up off the couch, don't bother.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.